Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. It's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, if you heard last week's broadcast, you know we're opening today with the second of a two-part chat featuring the co-founders of Transitions Mentoring Program at Family Reentry and a very special guest who not only engaged with this program as an incarcerated teen, but is now giving back by mentoring youths who are facing similar circumstances today. Then we've got a key interview aimed at all business owners and human resource professionals focusing on the growing trend of employee wellness programs. Who knew investing so little to promote the wellness of your employees could generate such a huge payback to your workforce? And finally, we're going to reach out to all men and the women and kids who love them, inviting you to attend a free upcoming men's health fair to kick off Brovember. It's happening at Yale New Haven Hospital. We'll tell you all about it. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. If you live in the Lower Naugatuck Valley communities or know someone who does, it's that time of year again. ACT Spooner House is currently accepting applications for families in the Lower Naugatuck Valley, that's from Naugatuck down to Shelton, who'd like to receive holiday food baskets. All you need to do is stop by the Spooner House at 30 Todd Road in Shelton to pick up an application or call 203-225-0453 for information about qualifying for assistance this holiday season. You want to learn more about how to support Spooner House, maybe volunteer, drop off some food or supplies, or to get support if you need their services. All you need to do is visit actspooner.org. Well, if you were listening to our program last week, you heard a very special invitation to an event that happened as we play this program. It happened last weekend in Orange, benefiting Transitions Mentoring Program at Manson Youth Institute in Cheshire, a program of family reentry, which helps young men age 14 to 22. The Transitions Program particularly helps young men 14 to 22 transition from incarceration back into the community. But family reentry really has a multifaceted and now almost three decades old program. Long before the idea of a second chance community was a glimmer in the eye of the outgoing governor, Malloy, family reentry recognized that there were proven ways to ensure folks who are transitioning out of incarceration would be able to enjoy success in their communities, success in their work, success with their families, and we are celebrating that in the second half of the program, first by checking in one more time with John Mealy, who's a co-founder of the Transition Mentoring Program, along with Daeed McKnight, and we'll be meeting Jezreel Vasquez, who is part of that program, has benefited from it and has made a decision to stay with it as a mentor or as someone who's going to be going in and talking to these young men and showing them through his own example how he is making a difference and making the changes he needs to make. So first, John, if folks weren't listening to us last week, give us a quick background on family reentry and how the Transitions program fits into that.
Well, Family Reentry is an organization that's been around since 1984, 85, and their mission statement is all based on helping people that are being released from incarceration to transition them back into the community in the best possible way so that they stay in the community and become a part of the solution instead of that of the problem. They have they're the leading organization in this field, and they've been acknowledged for that over the years. And the mentoring transition has been around since about 2000, and I've been involved since 2005. And what we do there is the helping of the youth 14 to 22. We work with them inside. We have volunteer mentors that get involved in their lives in and also out, and we continue the guidance and support and bring opportunities through their incarceration and, most importantly, when they're released. And we've witnessed many success stories, as you will hear from Jezreel in a moment, I'm sure.
Yes, and what's important for folks to know is, although they missed the event that we talked about on the first half of our program last weekend, it's important for them to know that the program still needs support, because the state of Connecticut was providing some subsidy for this for a period of time, but several years ago, along with a number of other support programs, that funding ended. But the program has continued. It's been successful and flourished, even though it has not had the state support, and that is on the strength of the belief that private funders have, right?
Yes. We have been self-funding this program for a few years, and it's based on people that have been involved, that are know of the work that we do, know young men that have gotten out and been in their community and doing the work, and of course the fundraiser last weekend. So we're continuing getting all help from all people in the community to continue this very valuable program, so these young men get a chance at life just like anyone else can.
Excellent. Well, I'm really honored and excited to talk to one of those young men. Jezreel Vasquez is here with me today as we record the program. So, Jezreel, it's great to meet you. They say life can sometimes take you on a strange journey to get you to the ultimate best destination. And it really sounds like you're almost at that destination, because you've made a decision out of the twists and turns and negatives that you've experienced. Maybe even brought on yourself. You're going to go out and help a lot of other people that are in your position right now. And, I dare say you seem to have the energy and the attitude that this is going to be something that's going to allow you to affect dozens, maybe hundreds of lives for the better for the rest of your life, which is really, really exciting. But let's go back to what got you to this point in your journey in the first place. How did you end up at Manson?
Yes, I just want to say thank you for the opportunity, first of all, for allowing people like me to have a voice, allowing people like John and Family Reentry to have a voice and be able to share some of our stories, share some of our successes and our struggles. And I think it's wonderful that you're starting with what my struggles were. What kind of got me to Manson, I was involved. I was 16 at the time, and just committed a burglary one offense. It landed me with 12 years suspended after 5 years with 5 years probation. I fought the court case for 2 years and was unsuccessful in gaining my freedom, but I understood, and even my mother can tell you guys a story. At 16, in the visiting room, I told her, I said, "Mom, I take responsibility for what I've done. I don't want you to cry, to worry about me. Understand that I'm going to be good and I'm going to come out stronger." Since then, those 5 years, I John knows, it was a lot of struggle. It was a lot of fighting that I've done, not physically, but mentally, in terms of preparing myself for the moments that when I get the chance to have freedom again, that I'll do my best with it and that I won't spoil that opportunity.
I think unfortunately too many people think they really know what goes on in the inside of a correctional institution, because they've seen some TV shows about it, or they've seen a documentary or two. Very few people out there comparatively probably know someone or have the opportunity to talk and care about someone that has been incarcerated for any period of time. Did you ever experience moments when you were incarcerated where you actually were kind of facing a crisis of faith? You didn't really, you weren't sure that you were going to be able to, like, honor your mom and your promise to her. I mean, they say that a lot of these places are basically, universities for lifelong criminals. They provide opportunities to make bad networking connections and to make, to teach them how to do bad things. But you seem to have been able to find the strength to rise above that.
Well, one thing I do, I every single day, I said, you know what, today, I don't have it today. Every morning I woke up with the same attitude of, I don't think I can make it. But that is how the conversation started, but it's not how it ended. Every day, everyone knows I got up early. I went to work. I maintained a job. I help kids. I talk to them. I can't tell you how many kids I've had one-on-one conversations with where you find out about these kids, because they're kids, that are between those ages that we're talking about, 14, 15-year-old kids, 16-year-old kids, that don't know how to make adult decisions, that aren't supposed to be able to know how to, but whatever got them to the situation that they got themselves in, that got them where we're having that one-on-one sit-down, you could see every one of those people were good. I didn't come across bad people. I came across misunderstood people, people that didn't have the opportunity like I have now to have my voice, to be able to speak. And, you know, programs like the programs we've did with John, programs we did with the Yale students where they mentored us. Imagine coming from an inner city where you are poor, you don't have money, you don't have access to healthcare, you don't have access to simple things of life, where you're taught if you want something, you go get it. You fend for yourself, you survive. You don't live, you survive. And coming from where those people like that have come from, where I've come from, to be able to be in rooms where you're talking to Yale students about education, you're talking to them about your life goals, talking to them about what you've been through, and they listen and they share what they've been through, and they blow your minds and you blow their minds, and you're like, wow, someone who society deems more important than the other are in the same room together, and we're looking at each other as equal.
Yeah,
that was powerful.
So how long have you been dealing with being the mentor versus the mentee?
The process kind of transitioned itself, not when I was released. It was actually a process that kind of happened when I was in prison. Mm-hmm. So over the I ended up doing about 4.5 years. Mm-hmm. I got released because of good time, and I went to a halfway house. Mm-hmm. I've been out for about a year now, and while I was still inside, kids come up to you and they go, hey, you know, because everyone knows each other.
Yeah, yeah.
You're around these people
24/7. Right.
And they come up to you and they go, hey, how are you always smiling? How are you always... And I used to laugh because I didn't notice it.
Yeah.
People would go, hey, you're smiling. Hey, you're always cheery. Hey, you're always encouraging people. Like, how are you smiling? You've been in for 2, 3, 4 years, 4.5 years. How are you still having hope? How are you still going?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? You just got to do it. You get up every morning, you tell yourself, I'm not going to make it, but you get up and you make it. And by doing that, you're succeeding every day. You're doing something every day. What's going to make you better today than yesterday? And that's the mentality that it sounds cliche and sounds like it's in the end of movies where you're like, hey, you know, let's make it. Everything's going to be good at the end. And even though you know sometimes it might not be, you have to have that mentality. You have to have that hope. Because if you don't hold on to hope in a negative situation, you're never going to be happy when you get to a good part of your life because you didn't work for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, part of being the happy ending is what you're going to be able to do for so many other people. So let's talk about what your plans are now, in part thanks to Transitions Mentoring Program and Family Reentry, and your own energy and faith and what your unique and special personality kind of brings to the picture.
Well, for me, I'm kind of smiling as I tell
you. What's the plan?
Currently, what I'm doing for the past year since I've been out, I'm in my second semester on my associate's degree. I'm working on being an educator.
Right.
I'll be transferring to Central University for education as well. They have a top program there.
Yes.
I've been working. I'm currently a manager at Metro by T-Mobile, is what we're called now. Not a shout out to the company, but so it feels good to be in a managerial position. It feels good to be able to make my own money. I'm currently working on getting a car that I've been working on. I'm building my credit. Just trying to stabilize myself, stabilize my life, and trying to rebuild. It was hard to be out of school. While I was in prison, I graduated with a high school diploma, and I graduated on time, which was huge. I completed about 32 programs since when I was in there. I also did the mentoring program and Now, what I want to do for a career, obviously, is do special education. Mm. And with that, I want to help individuals that have been in situations I've been in, which is why the program is important to me, and also to be there for individuals who just need help. Just to help people with special needs as well, is big for me.
Great. Very good. So, we are so pleased to have Daeed McKnight join us. He's co-creator of the Transitions Mentoring Program as he greets our other two guests, John Mealy and Jezreel Vasquez. We squeezed two more minutes out of the program for you, Daeed. And so, like maybe in very few cases you get at home, you get the last word for our program.
It doesn't happen often.
but what we want you to do really is kind of shout out to the people that might not have been able to attend the event at Orange Country Club, but the program still needs support and it still needs funding. So as the co-creator of this program, in the last couple of minutes that we have, just tell people a little bit about what your experiences are and why it's so important to put more people like Jezreel Vasquez back out in the street in the right place to do the kind of things that he is committed and pledging to do.
I just wanted to say thank you for having me. Sure. And you know, John Mealy, he really spearheaded this program. I've just been assisting him with it for the past 9 years, I believe. And it's been a joy to be a part of, just to see the progress of the young men who often, more times than not, really don't even know that they have other options besides the kind of activities that they have been engaging in. Because of, you know, behavior that's something that's just been learned behavior in the environment, and because of different things going on as far as poverty, yeah. Frustration, ignorance, lack of education, which for the most part is not their fault.
Yeah, it grows out of the ground they're planted in.
Absolutely. Yeah. So to me, I think, especially at a crucial time right now in Connecticut, even though we are seen all over the country as the second chance state, to have a second chance state, there's two components to that. You got to have a pre-release part before the guys get out, which the commissioner and the governor have done a great job. But where the governor is lacking at is when he cut the budget for reentry programs on the post-release side. These supportive services are very important. So becoming a part of the team and joining us in partnership, whether it's through money, whether it's through volunteering, to help keep providing these young men with stability and a positive support network when they get out is very important at a time where that's not being provided by, there's no reentry funding for community programs in the community to provide these resources. So I think now is really the opportune time for people to come together and say, hey, you know, they did what they did. They cut the budget. But as a community, let us step up to the plate, come together and see how we can be creative to create opportunities and resources for these young men. If you want to reduce crime, we got to increase reentry resources. And it's very important. Just looking at the statistics, right now, I believe Manson Youth Institution, which is they take guys ranging from ages 14 to 22, 21. Mm-hmm. At one time, they held more, but now they're down to 360-something people, I believe. Mm-hmm. But that's a direct result of when they had those community programs in place that provide the support resources. So now that those things have disappeared, if we don't be creative to continue to provide those kind of support resources on the outside, you're going to see that number go back up.
Well, and as John pointed out, and we talked about in the first segment of the program that played prior to the event, you know, Connecticut is, as you pointed out, known now nationally, and I dare say even globally, for its second chance society. But family reentry and the success of that second chance society may not have ever happened or happened as quickly or as well if it hadn't been for the nationally known work that family reentry has done decades before the governor introduced the Second Chance Society initiatives here in Connecticut. So it's important for people to learn more about this program and the way that they wrap these incarcerated individuals in support and education and peer-to-peer information and interaction, as well as using scientifically proven programs and, you know, using science also to help help achieve the goals that is helping Connecticut close prisons and getting more and more people who are incarcerated back into productive, tax-paying members of society, folks like my guest this morning, Jezreel Vasquez, is going to be going into special education, just about to transition into Central Connecticut State University. Just an inspiring story, and so glad to meet you, Jezreel. And we're going to be, you're going to be coming back on the radio with me a bunch of times, I could tell you, as long as I got the microphone. So my guest this morning, Jezreel Vasquez, who is the beneficiary of the Family Reentry Transitions Mentoring Program when he was at Manson Youth Institute. My longtime friend, John Mealy, who kind of got this whole transitions thing kicked off, and my new friend, Aid McKnight, who was co-creator and supporter of the transitions program. Once again, go to familyreentry.org to learn more about it. And gentlemen, best of luck, and thank you all for meeting me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, the topic of discussion in this segment is going to be on not only how you're keeping well at home, but the interest that your employer will likely have in making sure they're keeping you well. And to talk about wellness at work, we're bringing in a brand new friend to the award-winning For the People. Roberta Wachtelhausen is Senior Vice President and Chief Sales and Marketing Officer at Connecticare. She's going to let us call her Bert for the remainder of the program. Bert, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John. Great to be here.
So as we sort of alluded to in our brief introduction, wellness is really becoming not just important to the employee, but to the employer as well, right?
Yeah, it is. You know, everyone who's running a business in the state of Connecticut is concerned about healthcare costs on the rise, the affordability of healthcare for their employees. And they're looking for solutions like wellness programs to keep people healthy and out of the hospital in the first place. Mm. So there's a lot of interest in these types of programs.
And with the, of course, with the escalating cost, not only on the employee, but on the employer as well, this is becoming even more critical. And we are starting to see a lot of businesses, and not just these lean, quick-moving, kind of entrepreneurial-based small businesses, but huge, you know, sometimes multinational or even global corporations based here in Connecticut, moving on to some sort of a larger wellness program, right?
Yeah, it is. A growing number of employers of all shapes and sizes are really taking these programs seriously, again, as a way to keep their workforce healthy. So it's really not just the up-and-coming startup, it is every business really has to keep their eye on this and is using these types of programs to get a better result. Again, you know, you keep people healthy, you keep them out of the hospital, and I think more and more people over time are recognizing that just providing insurance for their employees, it's a way to help them financially when they get sick. But the better answer is to keep them healthy in the first place. So there's a lot of emphasis on preventive care and chronic disease management, making sure that people who are diagnosed with a disease know how to care for themselves once they get diagnosed. So a big focus of going upstream and making sure that people stay healthy in the first place.
Right. And it's not, I guess it's not just about making sure, you know, like little things like giving people flu shots to make sure that they don't get the flu, but it's also about making sure those employees feel important, you know, feel valued to the point where if they're feeling like they have a cold or maybe something else that's communicable, they're comfortable calling in sick because it's a matter of not spreading it to other employees as well. But there's also the role that businesses are now able to play in reducing the level of chronic illnesses, things like diabetes, because they're bringing in you know, farm to table food and more fruits and vegetables for snacks, the rows of chip and candy machines and soda machines in the break room are slowly being replaced by healthy alternatives.
Yes, no doubt about it. And, you know, some employers who just started out trying to put in a wellness program would start with just that, putting healthy snacks in their vending machines. But there is a growing demand to support these programs, not just in, I'll call it the coverage, and providing incentives for doing things like flu shots, as you mentioned, but really trying to create a culture of wellness. So the farm-to-table, making sure that cafeterias have healthy alternatives, and really looking at every aspect of what goes on at the workplace and making sure that there are healthy alternatives. Making sure some employers, like ConnectiCare, actually, we have a meditation room because we know that stress in the workplace causes people to either have to leave for the day or maybe not come in because of what they're dealing with in their family situation or even dealing with customers on the phones. And so we try to provide for any way that an employee needs to get a little refreshing moment where they can kind of regroup and go back to work, or like I said, even the cafeteria and making sure that the menus support people who are really trying to maintain a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, and not only do the costs for these cooperative healthcare plans, the part of the expense that is borne by the employer that have been increasing quite regularly and sometimes in significant increments as far as the cost goes, they want to mitigate those cost increases by showing the insurance underwriters that their employees as a base are healthier. But, you know, talk about paying for itself. How about productivity loss when so many people are out sick, especially with chronic conditions?
Yeah, definitely. So if you can keep people healthy in the first place, keep people kind of out of the chute to a chronic disease, you do have increased absenteeism. We use the word presenteeism, too, to make sure that even when you're at work, you're focused on your work. So you talk about the investments that employers are making. It definitely does have a return on investment to spend money on these programs and make them available. And even to the point where some employers will put incentives, whether they're financial incentives, dollars contributed to an employee's health reimbursement or health savings account in exchange for participating in these kinds of programs. More and more employers are recognizing that these programs really do have a financial impact, both to their business for absenteeism, presenteeism, as we spoke about, but to overall healthcare costs. Now, the ROI financially and mathematically is sometimes elusive and difficult to prove, because how do you calculate the savings of cost avoidance? But certainly, intuitively, if you keep people healthy, keep them focused, and keep them at work, your business will be more successful if you do that.
Yeah, the morale quotient and the happiness quotient have a tactile value that we could never really count in dollars.
That's true. Absolutely true.
And on another front, from an employment and economic development capacity, it would be an understatement to call the partners that bring corporate wellness programs and develop corporate wellness programs for companies like ConnectiCare, to call them a cottage industry. That would certainly be an understatement, because according to the stat that's here in front of me, corporate wellness programs and the organizations that develop them, either within companies or those who come in to partner, this is grown into an $8 billion industry here in the United States. So certainly there's a lot of interest, I guess, even on the part of partnering healthcare systems and hospitals and large medical groups and communities that are coming in and working hand in hand with industry to put talk about farm to table. Here we are doctor to patient. We're putting professionals together with industry to maximize the potential for these wellness initiatives.
Yeah, I would agree, John. In fact, one of the things we've noticed is, the system is fragmented, right? So you have doctors who see patients only when they see them, and they have information about that patient's health. But we're in a very unique position as the health plan to be able to see all the different doctors that someone is going to, and certain patterns start to develop about that patient, or in our world, it's our members, so we can start to see how someone is consuming health services, if they're on the path for chronic disease. We can see if they're not taking a medication that perhaps they should. And we try to really work with the doctor and open up lines of communication to say, your patients, our members, are in need of certain diagnostic tests or certain preventive care, and really trying to inform the doctor much more beyond what he or she can see in the way they treat their patients personally, to give them more insight about that member's overall health and how they're taking care of themselves and how they're potentially managing or not managing their chronic disease. So we really try to work closely with provider groups in the state of Connecticut to share that information on their patients who happen to be our members.
Wow, that's great. We're about halfway through our chat with Roberta Wachtelhausen. She is Senior Vice President and Chief Sales and Marketing Officer for ConnectiCare. We're calling her Bert. We will be back after a very brief break to talk more about employer wellness and how employers are working harder, in part with the support of organizations like ConnectiCare, to not only stem the unsustainable increases in healthcare costs, but the bottom line, making their employers healthier, happier, more productive, and ensuring that they don't either acquire chronic diseases or, essentially come to work sick and potentially spread that sickness around and get others sick. So we'll be back to talk to Bert Wachtelhausen in just a moment. Stay with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. In 2018, customers who obtained health insurance referrals through Access Health CT may have chosen a plan that was the lowest cost and/or offered specific coverage options at that time. Well, that plan may have changed, or maybe you experienced other life changes on your end, like adding or removing members of a family, where people live, or income details. There are multiple factors that might affect the monthly cost of a 2019 plan. So to provide the best information to state residents, Access Health CT is bringing users a new look and feel to its website and enhancements to its health plan comparison and shopping tool. All you need to do is visit accesshealthct.com and learn how this new tool can help customers shop for plans during the 2019 annual open enrollment period that begins November 1st and ends December 15th. It's easy to find the right health plan that fits your needs and budget. Just go to accesshealthct.com. All right. Thanks for sticking with us. We're back with Bert Wachtelhausen. She's Senior Vice President and Chief Sales and Marketing Officer for ConnectiCare. As you heard in the first part of our report this morning, we're talking about employer wellness. And Bert, you did cover a few of the things that employers are putting in place for their employees, including their ConnectiCare, with that kind of meditation room, that stress relief atmosphere. Have you heard of any other really interesting or innovative programs from your members and partners, maybe not just here in Connecticut, but across the country?
Yeah, in fact, there's a whole spectrum of activities and programs that would constitute a wellness program. Wellness is a broad term, and it really means different things to different people. And we talk to some employers, and they say, I have a wellness program, and really all they're doing, I say all, but it's at least the first step, is to get employees to walk and to sponsor challenges that way, and to eat this, not that, in the cafeteria, as I mentioned earlier. A lot of it is around physical movement. You know, our whole culture and here in this country, we're very sedentary, and so a lot of the programs really start with getting people to move and getting people to eat right, because there's so much evidence that shows that a lot of disease is all driven by lifestyle. So if you think about diabetes or metabolic syndrome, all driven off of, in many cases, obesity. And so just getting people to move is a really great first step. So some of our employers here at ConnectiCare have chosen to put in challenges within their workplace to get groups to exercise and compete. It's always good to do exercise with your friends and to motivate each other that way. So a lot of the challenges and exercise challenges are really designed to get people to work together. Some employers have put in what they're calling gamification, so they create and earn points across a company with multiple locations. So they may have one division of a company challenging another, and there's a lot of digital platforms that are set up to keep track of people's scores and how are they doing, and then rewarding teams for challenges. We see that a lot too. So people are trying to keep it fun, keep it exciting, keep people engaged, allowing people to socialize. Everybody has their own reason why they don't exercise, and so a lot of what we hear is, you know, you have to find what is somebody's why. Why are they not getting off the couch? Why are they not moving? Why are they not eating right? And so a lot of the programs, the most successful ones, are really focused on that personalization and not just painting all of the different demographics in a workforce, not painting them all with the same brush, and really trying to focus on what does my demographic look like and what are the challenges I have, and making sure that the culture of the company supports it, but also making sure it's personalized so that you can actually motivate the different demographic groups that are within an employee population. So at ConnectiCare, as an example, we employ a lot of the techniques and tactics that I just spoke about with challenges and gamification, but we really sit down with an employer and say, we look at the data and how are people using the healthcare benefits, and really trying to customize a program for that culture and what the data would suggest that company needs. Some companies may be, you know, they may have employees that are going to the emergency room way too much beyond the norms of the state. And so we say, what's going on here? Why are people going to the emergency room? It's expensive. But more importantly, trying to really understand what's driving some of these things and then putting solutions in place to really shine a light on reversing whatever trend is happening in that employer's culture.
Yeah. And as you mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, companies that have even started with one simple initiative and have a long way to go to even get up to speed with some of the companies that are doing these large scale and very comprehensive and innovative multi-point initiatives. But everybody wants to make their wellness program more successful, whether they're just providing a salad bar in the cafeteria or this one of these kind of national multi-point initiatives. And this is where we learn a little bit of the lingo of the industry, and that is the term VBID. Tell us a little bit about that.
VBID, V-B-I-D, stands for Value-Based Insurance Designs. And this is really insurance programs that are focused really strongly encouraging folks to utilize care at the right place, at the right time in their lives. So, for example, a value-based insurance design would reward for getting preventive screenings. That's a really big one, making sure that somebody of a certain age who is supposed to see their primary care doc once a year, maybe have a mammogram if they're a woman over 40 or 50 or the latest national standard, making sure they're getting that at the right time, a colonoscopy every 10 years or 5 if that's what your health profile would suggest. And it's rewarding for those kinds of plans. And the reward isn't necessarily just, you know, giving somebody a gift card. The reward would actually be using the insurance plan design to eliminate any financial barriers to getting these screenings done. So, for example, an employee in a value-based insurance design wouldn't have to pay a copay or a deductible to get a colonoscopy or a mammogram if they were supposed to do that according to their age and gender. So it's removing the financial barriers so that people can do the right thing at the right point in their lives. Getting a flu shot is another example. Everyone should get a flu shot. And so it's removing any kind of financial barrier in the insurance program so that people can get these tests at the most appropriate time. So it's called a value-based insurance design because the design of the insurance benefit itself is really geared toward getting people to do the right thing at the right time, and the program removes the financial barriers that might be in the way of them doing that when they need to.
The other really incredible thing about an employee wellness program is happens when they bring that wellness knowledge home, because one of the other things that can affect productivity and absenteeism in a company is if somebody in the household gets sick. And so I have to imagine there's a ripple effect when these people come home, fired up and inspired, seeing the results in themselves and having their loved ones see it. So maybe the initiation of employee wellness programs are having a great effect with the loved ones of those employees as well.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. We actually have some new programs that we've put into market that are specifically focused on pre-diabetes. So, and the impact of these positive changes that have happened to employees really carry through to home. So, as an example, we have a lot of programs in pre-diabetes focused on, again, eat this, not that, and making sure people know their numbers and get educated. And a lot of times, you know, folks don't even know they have pre-diabetes. It's so prevalent in our society. One out of three of us in the United States has pre-diabetes, and 90% of us don't even know we have it. So the very first step is to start with, we call it health literacy and knowing your numbers, and then creating programs that really focus on diet and exercise. And once these employees in these programs, in our experience, they start to lose weight, they start to feel better, they start to get educated that, you know, when they go into restaurants, they should be looking for healthy choices. Well, pretty soon, the whole family is starting to eat healthier, and pretty soon, on football Sunday, they're making chicken wings that are baked and not fried. I mean, it's little things like this that really start to turn people's lifestyle around. But they can't do it by themselves. They need family and support at home as well.
Yeah, that's right. Bring on the veggie dip instead of the chips and dip, and we'll turn this tide sooner or later. Well, Bert, it's been fantastic to chat with you, but I'm sure there's a bunch of folks out there, small business owners and large corporate HR and leaders who are listening, who want to learn more. So how can they turn to your organization to learn more about either initiating or improving employee wellness programs?
Well, John, I would suggest that they go directly to either kineticcare.com, you can find us there, or the specialized program that we have inside of Kineticcare where they can get more information on wellness programs. It's called Care Management Solutions. So the site would be www.caremanagementsolutions.com. A lot of information there. But certainly just going to kineticcare.com is a great way to start.
Excellent. Roberta Wachtelhausen is Senior Vice President and Chief Sales and Marketing Officer at Kineticcare. A very educational and informative chat with you this morning, Bert, and we look forward to talking with you folks again about a number of the other initiatives that you're helping people do to stay well. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, John. Really appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Well, we just heard a mouthful about employee wellness programs, but now as I sort of wrap up the program celebrating my 57th birthday today, I'm glad to make a brand new friend. Dr. Stan Honig is on the line with us. He's a professor of urology at Yale University and the director of men's health at the Department of Urology at Yale New Haven Hospital. Coming up in just a few days is the first of Movember, not November, but Movember, in recognition of men's health around the world. And we're going to be inviting all men that are listening and all the men that you ladies love over to Yale on Thursday, November 1st for an early evening kind of happy hour of men's health for Movember. So Dr. Honig, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for joining us here on this celebration of men's health that we're going to be having at your location.
My pleasure.
So first of all, let's give folks the rundown now, and we'll come back at the end of the show in case they tuned in late and remind them about what's happening. Is this men's health fair something that you've done regularly, or is this hopefully the first of what will be an annual thing?
Well, we've done similar type of things like prostate screenings, and we've had information sessions on men's health issues, but this is the first time we've done it all together at the same time. So patients who will come by our center between 5 and 7 on November 1st will have the opportunity to have learned about information about prostate cancer screening, and we'll also be having other tables and information on things like blood pressure screening, smoking cessation, colorectal screening, and then a special table for men's intimacy issues. So things relating to low testosterone, erectile dysfunction, fertility testing, things like that. So we really have tons of information, not only screening, but a wide variety of things that are important for men to have checked. Men don't really go to the doctor the way they should. Women are very good at going to the doctor. We kind of lose men between the ages of 18 and 40, and you know, patients or men or adolescents go to the doctor when they see their pediatricians, but once they kind of graduate high school, a lot of the times they may not see a doctor for 5, 10, 15 years. Mm. And we're trying to get men back into the concept that they should be checked regularly. They should have testicular self-exams. They need to have understanding of blood pressure screening, understanding what the risk factors are for cancers and things like that.
That's very interesting because it so closely correlates to the initiatives that we're hearing from organizations from our like our Connecticut clearinghouse for health insurance and other professionals that are related to particular types of illnesses, and that we're also in a place in our national history where we're trying to reel young men of that age back onto insurance programs, which once they are attached to some sort of a health insurance program at that crucial kind of 18 to 30 age frame, they're getting a lot of reinforcement and reminders about preventative health that they might not necessarily be getting. And it's all about the message and the repetition, I guess. I guess when you're in that kind of 18 to 30 age range, a lot of really serious diseases can happen, and it is really while you may feel you know, as though nothing can happen to you, unfortunately, a lot of men in that age range are being impacted by really, really serious types of health crises.
Yeah, and I think that, for instance, testicular cancer is not a common cancer, but it's one of the most treatable cancers, and it's the most common cancer between the ages of 18 and 40. So that's something, a simple thing that men can do is check themselves, you know, once a month. Women are in the typical style of checking their breasts once a month when they have their periods, but men don't really know how to do that or check their things. And I think it's important that we stress that men check themselves, and then they get to their like early 40s, beginning 50s, and then they realize, well, we're kind of getting to the point where maybe I need to get checked. And then they start to get back into the system, but sometimes they've gained some weight, they've had high cholesterol, they've started to have a development of high blood pressure. So the earlier we can get them back into the system for changes in lifestyle, the more likely we are to prevent long-term issues relating to high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, things like that.
Yeah, and I guess, from another perspective, you've got a lot of young men that are engaged in everything from running to maybe they're on like a pickup basketball team or a hockey league, and, you know, maybe they get a little ache or a pain or a pull or they feel like they have an injury, and they just decide to tough it out and they don't go see a doctor. Well, that's the kind of injury, if I understand correctly from some of the experts that have been on the program, that could actually reduce their ability to enjoy that type of physical activity that helps keep them healthy for the rest of their lives if they don't get the right treatment right away, right?
For the most part. I mean, I think that, you know, we're not saying everyone should run to the doctor real quick, but if you have a problem that doesn't heal, if you have a issue that doesn't heal, yeah, you need to go to the doctor. One other issue that comes up in that age group too is, and it's very timely, is opioid abuse. Mm. And we're going to have a table and a lot of information about opioid abuse for men and the therapies that are available in Connecticut, all the different options that patients have for help in this area. And that's real important and real timely for this particular, you know, 18 to 45 group. But, you know, we don't want to limit it to just the younger group. We want men who are of older age two to come, and not that they're older. You know, you are 57, but, you know, you're above that 46 range.
Yes.
But, you know, it's important to have your prostate checked. If you're having problems with intimacy, sexual dysfunction, we're going to have a little private table. We have specialists there that will be able to share information. We'll have a lot of different props that can explain to you a little bit about how men can have problems with erections, how men can have low testosterone, and how that can affect their energy level, how it can affect their sex drive, and the treatments that we have available. So I think that the nice thing about this particular overall fair is that it's not just prostate screening. It's not just for young men. It's really not only urological issues, not only intimacy issues, but general health issues. The blood pressure, the smoking, the colorectal screening, the opioid information, et cetera.
Yeah. The other kind of fun thing that goes with this is as we are inviting folks out on the very first day of Movember, Men's Health Month, to the Yale Physicians Building, third floor on Howard Avenue from 5 to 7 p.m. for this free and very critical men's health fair, is that for the rest of Movember, a lot of people might be raising facial hair, growing beards, mustaches, or both. And this is a global movement to remind men about taking better care of their health. So it's awesome that Yale Urology is hosting this special day of screening and education. Lots of exciting things going on at this event, and we hope everyone will turn out. Once again, it's Thursday, November 1st from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Yale Physicians Building, third floor on Howard Avenue in New Haven. And they'd like you to register in advance if you could. So if you can go to ynhh.org/events, or give them a call at 888-700-6543. That would be great. Otherwise, certainly they would welcome you no matter what, because as we're hearing, it's so critical, especially you younger guys, 18 to 35, why not pop in and see if there is some information there that resonates with you, because that 1 2-hour visit to Yale in New Haven could make a huge difference for the rest of your life. So, Dr. Stan Honig, thank you so much for being part of the program and reminding men why Movember and every other month of the year is so important that they take care of their health no matter what age they are. Really appreciate you being part of the program this morning.
My pleasure. And don't forget, spouses are welcome, and spouses sometimes drive all this as well. So listen to your spouse and partners. Bring in your partners as well and let them hear about it. We're happy to help.
Let's make this a big Movember party at the Department of Urology in the Yale Physicians Building. Thursday, November 1st from 5 to 7. We hope to see you all there. Thank you, Doctor. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for airtime in writing to me via email at john.voket, that's john.voket, at connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast without permission of Connoisseur Media. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voket. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and important information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.